chocolate cake. New York City. The Amazing Race Canada. These are a few of my favorite things. Now, you'll notice that retirement savings was not on that list, despite the fact that I've written a book on that topic. But that doesn't mean that it is any less important than chocolate cake or the Amazing Race. In fact, it's essential. No matter your circumstance, it is essential to look to the future and plan financially. So we are continuing our series on behavioral economics by looking at retirement savings specifically. Milena Vinsky is the behavioral economist lead at PwC, and she's here to talk about how behavioral economics can help with retirement planning. Hello there.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
We talk a lot about this stuff. Last week, we were talking about BE and debt. We've talked about the Save More Tomorrow intervention. What are some of the big, big ideas or big concepts that connect to retirement savings?
I think it's always helpful when you're thinking about a problem is to try and understand why it's happening in the first place. I mean, intentionally, we know that everybody should save for retirement. It's not a financial literacy issue necessarily. Yeah. Everybody knows they need to save more for tomorrow.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
What?
Exactly. No. Everybody knows you need to save more for tomorrow.
Yeah.
But why is there this action intention gap? So the intention is there to save, but the action unfortunately doesn't follow through. And I think that gap is where the behavioral toolkit is really beautiful and where it works really well. So when we think about retirement savings and sort of the big nuggets, I think it's really why we don't save more for tomorrow.
And what would be some examples?
So I think I'm a neuroscientist by trade, so I always go back to how the brain works. I think the first piece being that we tend to discount the future. So when you think about how the brain operates, it's basically a computer that crunches a bunch of information. We don't like to think about it that way. We like to think, you know, more the softer side of human behavior. But fundamentally, the brain processes and crunches a bunch of information, and then that leads to our behavior. When we think about processing data today, in this particular moment, you know, there's billions of pieces of data that our brain can crunch, and it's very comfortable in doing that. It can weigh the pros and cons very easily because all the information is there. When we think about the future, whether it's next week, whether it's 10 years from now, whether it's 20 years from now, that data becomes more nebulous. All of the missing data points we tend to just fill with very positive and happy thoughts, just assuming that everything will work out fine. So it makes it very difficult for us to withhold enjoyment today if we tend to discount what will happen in the future and just assume everything will go okay in the future anyway.
I completely can see that that is the way that many people think and behave. And then there are people for whom that's not the case.
Yeah.
And almost to the other end of the extreme where they're saving every little nut in their backyard for this time in the future. And you think, you have a life, right? You got to live it.
Yeah.
What is ingrained temperament and what so in the nature nurture debate on how our brains work, where do scientists deem the answer?
Oh man,
I know, and we only have 7 minutes to talk.
That's such a good question.
But we do know people who are born to be savers. They're just savers.
Yes, of course. And you can say for any true attribute of a human, there is a normal distribution. So you will always have people, the majority of people will stick right in the middle of that distribution. And that's where we see these issues of not being able to save more for tomorrow and tending to discount the future. There will people far end on one spectrum where they save way too much or they are sort of the penny pinchers, and then you'll have people way on the other side that will never save a dime.
What are the interventions that the industry knows work to address time discounting?
So I think a really big thing that a lot of the organizations need to do is to help, and we work with a lot of the FIs across Canada, is to make sure that clients understand what the costs are in the future if they don't act today. So, for example, a lot of average consumers don't know what the prices of milk and some of those primary staples will be in 10 years from now. They just assume it will be the same. And by just showing how much people have to spend on milk and some of these staples in the future actually leads to more retirement savings by 8%.
Well, and it's funny because if we do that backwards, I remember when a chocolate bar
was, you know, 50 cents. You cannot buy a chocolate bar for 50 cents anymore. So yeah. That way it makes perfect sense. Right. Why do we see so little in the communication from the financial institutions?
Well,
in
yeah, that this area? this was going to be my second thing. So I think another part about neuroscience is that too much information tends to break the brain, right? Too much complexity tends to make us sort of seize up and have a bit of a paralysis. And if it's something that we're already discounting in the future, we're going to be more motivated to actually go out and try and understand what that complexity is. And so the FIs have a really big obligation to take the inherently very complex products that they are providing for their customers to be able to save more for tomorrow, and distilling it down into layman language. And it's always funny because the FIs will say, well, it's very, very simple. It's the most simple we could possibly put it. And then I put up my hand and I say, well, I'm a layman and right. I don't understand this. And I actually go and get them to read neuroscience journals.
Right. And see if they call that layman's terms.
Exactly. And the truth is it's not.
There is this notion of engaging with your future self, and that it's so hard for a person today to engage with someone who is 10 to 20 years older than us and not think of them as a stranger, which I think is how people would describe it. I have seen the intervention of photoshopping a current picture. Tell us about that. And does that really work?
It really does.
Will I look like daddy hot even when I'm 70? That's my fundamental question.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. There's got to be a bias in the algorithm that makes people
look hotter.
That's just got to be there. Otherwise, people would
discount it. Why wouldn't save? I'm not going to save.
Yeah, people would say, well, if I'm going to look like that anyway.
Or I'm going to have to save for the golf membership, the trip to Tuscany, and full-on plastic surgery.
Exactly.
Which is a lot.
Exactly. How do you work that into your
financial
plan?
You have to figure that out.
And how expensive is it going to be in the future?
Right, because if the milk's more expensive, the lift is going to be more expensive too.
No, there's actually really good apps where you not only Photoshop your face or you input your face, it Photoshops it for you. It ages you to an age of average retirement. So usually that's about 60. And there's a spectrum and scale in between for how much you actually will save. So on the left-hand side, you'll have your current face. The right-hand side, you'll have yourself when you're 60. And the further you go up the dial, meaning the more you save for the future, the happier your face gets.
Ooh.
So it's not just about seeing yourself in the future. It's about knowing your temperament, your mood, your quality of life in that future. And if you go closer to yourself, meaning that you are saving fewer dollars, then your face goes really upset. And that's actually been shown to increase contributions or interest in retirement saving by as much as 60%.
If you were to spend an afternoon with your best friend in the world who knew nothing about financial planning and nothing about behavioral economics, what are the two or three things that you would say to him or her in order to improve their outcomes as an individual? Because we can talk all we want about the policy interventions and the things that the FIs should be doing, of which there are many that they're not doing.
Yes.
But as individuals, what can we do? What would you tell your BFF?
Yeah, I would say that the FIs are trying. They're just very large organizations, and sometimes it can take them a little bit.
You are A, more generous than I, and B, your paycheck is correlate to your relationships with FIs, I don't care. I'll call them out.
I see them on the front lines. I know that they're trying. But yes, truthfully, there's a lot more room that can be made. The first thing I would say to my BFF is go a little bit easy on yourself. Changing your behavior is really hard. Mm. So you're going to mess up sometimes. Mm. Just know that that's the case and actually build it into your plan, that there will be times where you'll want to spend more money, and know that that's the case. You're going to want to spend more on a Saturday than you will on a Tuesday. So adjust for that, understand the fluctuation. That's a really big thing. The second thing is to actually go back into your spending habits and look where you're spending money. A lot of people don't really pay attention to the monotonous transactions, the lattes, the lunches, maybe a cocktail with a friend after work. They're so transactional and happen all the time that they lose salience, so we don't pay attention to them. So just take a look at 3 months of your spending and see what you're spending the most amount of money on, and make a plan to remove a certain amount of that spending in a category that's not necessary.
Do benchmarks or rules of thumb help or hinder individuals? So one of the things, like, you got to save 10%, and if you want to max out your RSP, it's 18%. And a lot of people look at that number and go, well, that is never going to happen, so why even bother?
Yeah, I think rules of thumb, people tend to assume that there's like a motive behind it, or that doesn't suit my circumstance. It's not local enough. So I would say no, that's not the most effective way. You have to build it into
If you could snap your fingers and change one societal behavior as it relates to, and I will snap for you, there you go, as it relates to retirement savings, what would it be?
It would be to not just talk about retirement, which is 40 years from now, but talk about the things that you can enjoy in the meantime that are assets that will build towards your liquidity in the future. So don't just focus on retirement. Focus on the joys that you will also be able to spend your money on in the meantime.
It's like you've been reading my book. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. Melanie Vinsky, Behavioral Economics Lead at PwC. We were talking about behavioral economics and how we can do a better job saving for retirement.